episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
This is podcast episode number 88.
Ooh, 88.
Yeah, so we could go back in time to ask Mozart why there are 88 keys on a piano.
I like the way you tied that together.
Hey, you know, there's only two things in our history that are really important about the number 88.
Do we need to go 88 miles per hour to make it there?
I would think so.
I would think so, too.
All right. Anyway, this is episode 88 of the Family Gamers Podcast. I am your host, Andrew, and as always, I am joined by my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We are here to bring you some fun stuff. We have news from the world of gaming.
Sure.
We did a live video.
We did a live
Facebook
video
tonight. We played Funky Chicken from, I forgot again, Happy Planet.
Happy Planet Games,
which is
the new imprint of North Star.
Yep.
Games.
That was pretty awesome.
It is ridiculous.
Yes.
And fun.
So you can watch that video if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/familygamersaa. It's ridiculous.
It's wonderful.
Anyway, so yeah, obviously we played Funky Chicken. We're going to talk a little bit more about the other games that we've been playing lately. I learned a new game over the weekend, which is a lot of fun. And
I learned some new games over the weekend. They just, you know, were the 10-minute variety, not the 3-hour variety.
Yeah. And we are going to talk about our Game Right Game Night. So we had mentioned that we were going to do a Game Right Game Night, and we did that for the Auburn Public Schools PTO last week.
Yep.
It was a weird week with snow days and stuff, but I think we had a pretty good turnout. The place was hopping.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. I still have to tabulate the sales and stuff so I can place the order for everything else. But yeah, it was awesome, and I want to talk a lot about it because a lot of people have actually asked us about the Game Right Game Nights, and we've shared some information with some people privately. I think we could talk about it kind of in general and what was good about it, what was bad about it, some recommendations that we have.
Sure.
If you help nonprofits in any way, shape, or form, Game Right has this amazing program, and we're going to tell you all about it. So,
but first, what we've been playing over
what
the last week
we
or
playing?
So.
Yeah,
well,
lots of stuff.
What game did you recently learn how to play, besides Funky Chicken?
Terraforming Mars from, I think, Stronghold Games. I didn't own it, so I wasn't paying that much attention to the box. so I got together with some guys from church after church yesterday, and we ordered some pizza, which was always good for somebody who just wrapped up a Whole 30.
Oh, my goodness. How's your stomach feel?
Did I tell you I woke up at 3 in the morning with stomach pains?
Oh!
But I'm okay now. I survived. But yeah, so Terraforming Mars, is it Stronghold?
You were right. It's Stronghold.
Excellent.
Good job.
And the guy that bought it had bought the insert from Meeple Realty, who is a competitor to Broken Token. And I think that was probably a good move because I have heard from a lot of people that the component quality in Terraforming Mars is not great.
Mm-hmm.
But the player mats are basically wrapped in like plastic. Like a clear, like, plexi, almost.
Oh, wow.
And it had, because of this Meeple Realty, like, insert thing or whatever, it had, like, the slots for stuff, sort of like the scythe board.
Yep.
So that was really nice, but I know that he took the player boards and laminated them before he even put them in the plastic thing, so he had done some modifications.
Oh, wow.
So I can't really talk too much about the quality of the components themselves, but... interesting game. Lots of different layers. That's a heavier. I think you could handle it, but it's heavier.
Yeah, I'm sure I could handle it, but it would involve, you know, a multi-hour block where neither one of us was chasing children.
Right.
So that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, maybe for some crazy game night with crazy gamers.
Maybe.
The one thing I will say is that I talked to Joe, Art of Board Gaming.
Mm-hmm.
You should check him out on Twitter at Art of Board Gaming. Because he was a big Terraforming Mars fan. And the thing I said to him was, I'm very glad that it's coming out on iOS later this year, because I'll buy it there, and it'll allow me to go through some iterations, sort of like how I did with Through the Ages or Twilight Struggle, to kind of, like, really get how this game works.
Mm.
And now for people who aren't very good at Through the Ages, it looks like I know what I'm doing.
Only for people who aren't good at it, though.
Yeah. Anyway. So that's probably... I definitely am looking forward to picking up the iOS version of Terraforming Mars when it comes out later this year. So
cool.
Yep.
While you were learning that, the kids and I were learning how to play Funky Chicken and the other new Happy Planet game, Monster Match.
Mm. Tell me a little bit about this game.
So Monster Match.
I will say this.
Yeah.
Claire did tell me that she liked Funky Chicken better than Monster Match.
Interesting. I feel like Monster Match has more game to it. than Funky Chicken.
Okay.
But Funky Chicken is just more pure fun.
Sure. Sure. So that was actually what spurred me on to say, like, we need a Facebook Live, this thing. Just like Sticky Chameleons, which is this ridiculous game.
Fun.
It made a really good Facebook Live video, I thought. So.
Well, and unlike Sticky Chameleons, Funky Chicken would be an excellent game to bring traveling.
Because it's
like,
just cards.
Not a good restaurant game, but like if you're going to be waiting in line somewhere, you could totally do this waiting in line.
Oh, make people mad.
It depends on how much you yell at each other. In the rules, they specifically have a quiet variation if you need to not be yelling at each other playing the game. So
I could see this game being played like in the line for Flight of Passage.
Yes, exactly.
At Disney World. Okay, sure.
That's the kind of line I'm thinking of. Or even at a con, waiting in line for to go into a panel.
But the line for Flight of Passage is longer.
Oh my goodness.
anyway.
That line is ridiculous. All right. Anyway, but Monster Match. So Funky Chicken, if you're curious, watch our video. But Monster Match is you lay out a bunch of tiles that have monsters on them. And the
did the match.
Yes. You make the monster match. You totally derailed me when you do that.
Success.
You lay out a bunch of tiles. They have monsters on them. The monsters have varying numbers of eyes, arms, legs, and then you take turns rolling these two dice. One die has numbers on it, numbers 0 to 5. The other die has little pictorial representations of eyes, arms, legs, etc. So you roll the dice.
Antennae.
And then you're like, all right, we're all looking for monsters with 4 arms, and everybody, as quickly as they can, finds a monster with 4 arms and puts their hands on it.
So are there a bunch of cards face up?
So there's, you start the game with 10 of these monsters face up. Kind of make the game board for everybody.
Okay, sure.
There's also a token in the middle that says zilch. That's the token you grab if there are no monsters that match the description.
Sure.
So you're all reaching for a monster that matches the description as quickly as possible. The first person to get their hand on each monster gets to keep that one in their score pile.
Mm-hmm.
I neglect to mention the reason you're trying to catch all these monsters is you live in a town full of bakeries and the monsters have stolen all the donuts.
Rude.
So each monster card also pictures 1, 2, or 3 donuts in the corner.
Are you trying to say that these monsters are going nuts for donuts?
I think they are, yes.
Uh-huh.
but in the end, so if there's no monsters that match at all, the first person who grabs the zilch token gets a monster off the top of the deck.
Ooh.
As
mystery monster!
Yeah, into their stash. And you lay out 10 more monsters. So this could happen when you have one monster out. Or it can happen when you have, like, 5 or 6 monsters out.
So 10 more monsters when you hit zilch.
Yes.
Ah. Interesting.
There are, of course, penalties for slapping wrong, whether it's you slapped a monster wrong or you slapped the zilch. You know, it's supposed to be touching, but let me tell you, pretty quickly it ended up...
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the gently placed magic maze pawn. Got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But no, it was a lot of fun. I definitely liked it. I liked it better at 2 players. It was a little bit more chaotic at 3 players. And like, you know, move your hand out of the way. I can't see.
Ow! Why'd you hit me?
Not so much the hitting, just the, hey, I couldn't see the monster under your arm.
Uh-huh.
That kind of stuff.
So next week's show will be conflict in gaming.
2 weeks.
2 weeks, right.
2 weeks.
Interview. Got it.
But, you know, there was some gaminess there. It's one of the few speed games I've played recently, that I actually enjoyed.
Okay. It sounds a little bit like, Dragons and Chickens from Dever.
It's got a lot of similarities to that. Yeah.
Okay.
You're looking for specific things on the cards.
Sure. It's really interesting how, like, the same mechanics kind of are cyclical, and multiple publishers will come out with the same mechanics.
Well, I feel like...
Or similar. They're not the same.
I mean, this sort of mechanic has been around for a long time.
Yeah,
I mean... But I think adding the dice rolling in makes it feel a little different.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was just thinking, like, that I split you choose thing has kind of come up
that's
in popularity
got a big thing recently.
And then this is something similar as well. All right, what else have we been playing? I mentioned Go Nuts for Donuts.
Yes. Oh, so at our Game Right game night, we bought ourselves a copy of Go Nuts for Donuts.
Finally.
We have played it 3 times in the last 4 days.
Right. Yep.
Because our children were like, yay! They were bouncing off the walls to realize we had finally bought the game.
We'll play it a few more times this week, and then we won't play it again for 2 months.
I don't know. The kids really like it.
It's a good game.
They really like it. It's a great game. Yep. Our 3-year-old has learned how to play. He still doesn't get the strategy, but he's finally learned the, like, pick your card that matches the donut you want. Keep it secret until everybody reveals. That was the hardest part for him, was remembering to keep it secret. And he makes, you know, not awful choices.
Mm-hmm.
He never wins, but he's usually not in last place either.
Right. So, by the way, so who wins this Monster Match game? Is it Azure?
Oh, so I think I won.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually, like, I'm actually surprised that you won. Not a comment on you at all.
It's not a memory thing. It's a...
Yeah, but he was killing us with dragons and chickens, too.
That's true. He was certainly doing fine at it.
Okay.
The 2-player game I did with him came down fairly close.
Mm-hmm.
The 3-player game, when it was both me and Claire playing against him, he didn't do so well. But
what a trooper.
It was still fine.
Let's see. What else did we do? I planned this in advance by a couple of days.
Yes.
We sat down at last on Saturday, and we replayed through / finally completed the first chapter of the Mice and Mystics campaign.
Yeah. I forgot how kind of fiddly it was to set stuff up and make sure we knew what movement was, but once we got into it,
I really think that's just a function of
being unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, because it had been basically 2 years since we had pulled it out.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of once we got the hang of it, you know, we missed one thing that created a large amount of contention, but
yeah.
I think once we got the hang of it, it was fine. It was amazing to me to see. I guess I wasn't even all that surprised, but I did find it remarkable that our daughter, who chose the leader because she wanted to be the leader, was playing like a coward. And both she and Asher were incredibly selfish.
Yeah, it was the...
I was a little surprised.
I don't want to fight right now. I want to move away from the fight and search so I can get more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me with Claire, but it surprised me with Asher.
A little bit. To be fair, I don't think Claire wanted to be the leader because he was the leader. I think she wanted to be the leader because she didn't like the only female character currently available, and so she was kind of like, this guy looks cool.
Didn't I already say that I would have been the female character? But anyway, it doesn't matter. So we played the first chapter of Mice and Mystics, and it was fun, and I'm looking forward to playing more of it. And I was asked if we could play it tonight.
Yeah, so they
definitely liked it and want to go back to it. So that's cool.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to doing more of that as a family. Like, the family role-playing thing is fun.
Mm-hmm. And there's not... I mean, the thing about it is, like, there's really not role-playing. It's just a dungeon crawl, really.
It's more fun when you do some role-playing, but yes, you don't have to do role-playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a structured game, right? There's not a whole lot of... There was, one genuine choice that we made in Chapter 1?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so... But that's fine. I mean, I think it's designed in that way. It's really designed for sort of novice RPG players.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. So, I did dish to Asher that there's a game by the same people with stuffed animals in it. Mm. So he was like, oh, I gotta try that. I was like, well, I gotta play through Mice and Mystics.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do this first. So, oh no.
I do wonder about Tail Feathers. It seems a little bit more complicated, so I'm not sure if that's going to be a little bit tougher for the kids to try to get through before we even consider Stuff Fables. But that's like 5 years away at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like, let's get through the first part of Mice and Mystics and then we'll talk.
Yeah.
That is just about it. Although we did get in another player of role player. I knew you were going to make that sound.
So good. So good.
We introduced Claire to role player.
We did.
She definitely seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, she did terribly, but, you know, strategy.
Yeah,
she's learning.
But there's a lot of stuff to keep track of at once in that game. I mean, I thought I was doing pretty well and then realized as we entered the final scoring that I had picked up a weapon that added one to a bunch of my
to your class attribute. Dice.
Well, it had ended up adding one to a bunch of my attribute mm-hmm. scores. And I was like, but I had them all planned out. No. So I lost a bunch of points there.
Sorry.
So, oh well.
But yeah. So we introduced that to another one of our friends and he really enjoyed it. So that was good.
Yeah. It is a fun game.
Yep. Do we play anything else? What else do we play?
That's about all we've played since the game night.
okay.
In the last 4 or 5 days. I've been doing some regular babysitting lately, and every time these kids come over, they want to play games with me, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, you're the cool parent of the friends kind of person.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Alternately, we have different games than they do at home.
Well, I didn't say you were cooler than their parents,
but
you're the cool parent of friends.
Okay. When they came over last week, we pulled out Anomia Kids.
Mm-hmm.
That was fantastic. I will go into more detail about this another time. Suffice to say, we really enjoy Anomia. Anomia Kids had the same feel as Anomia while being completely accessible for the kindergartner and first grader in the group, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That same time, one of the kids pulled out Corridor and was like, how do you play this? So mm-hmm. I showed them, and then all of a sudden they kind of set up their own little tournament of one-on-one play.
I will say that this particular family, they do a really good job of having structured competition. they're particularly good at it.
This most recent time, they're... first grader pulled out Toasted or Roasted and said, hey, can you play this game with me? And I was like, sure, I mm-hmm. guess.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually wanting to play Go Nuts for Donuts, and I knew we wouldn't have enough time.
Sure.
So he pulled out Toasted or Roasted instead. And then the older kids came and sat down too and said, hey, can we play this game?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see that still has some legs. I think it's going to come out more
during the summer,
seasonally in the summer.
Yeah, and we'll bring it with us camping and those kinds of things. Yep, totally. Well, I like that game a little bit more now that I got rid of the insert inside, so it doesn't take up half a shelf.
It doesn't take up as much space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And despite the water damage, our kids asked to play Ancestry with me. So when you were away doing something else, the kids and I played Ancestry, and we had fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Other than that, I guess I could mention the games that I played at the game night fundraiser.
Yeah, I didn't play
you
anything.
Didn't play
I
any.
Was running around like a crazy person.
I only played two, and when you hear what they are, you're probably going to laugh. The first one was Go Away Monster.
Aw, okay.
It's a newer printing than the one we have at home.
Sure. Yeah, I noticed the box was bigger than the one that we had.
The box is bigger. The artwork on the pieces makes them a little bit better differentiated.
Okay.
They're a little bit more themey.
Sure.
But it's definitely still exactly the same feel. Like, the artwork is not substantially different. It's just a little more colorful.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was fun. I mean, it was fine. And Claire talked me into playing Slamwich. I haven't played this since probably the last time we did a Game Right game night. It might even be the one before that. So at least a year and a half, maybe 2 years. I'm still not a big fan of Slamwich. It just doesn't do it for me. It reminds me too much of games like Slap. It's pattern matching games, but where you're taking turns setting down the cards, so you always have to be totally alert to what's going on, so you can smack your hand down on the card.
Right.
Like, it's fine. As our kids are getting older, I feel like at least I can play it without there being a ton of hurt feelings.
Okay.
But it's just not my kind of game.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I kind of agree with you. I have to be in a particular mood for a game like that, and it's not a common mood for me.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I will say, if you like that kind of speed match and, like, you need to stay focused the whole time, you know, and smack your hands down, for what it is, it's a good game. It's just not my favorite kind of game.
Right.
So.
Right.
I think that really is it.
Awesome.
You know.
I mean.
No, we haven't played much in the last week. Not at all.
It's been fun. It's been real fun. It's been good stuff. So. Well, we are going to take a break, and then when we come back, we are going to talk about the game night.
We are.
This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
And we're back.
So, Game Right Game Night. Okay. I think that one thing that this might be a little bit helpful, just to sort of set the stage a little bit. So, typically, when a retailer buys games from a publisher, they get them for half price, right? That's what they pay for them.
That's half of list price.
The wholesale cost of a game is about half of MSRP, and that makes a lot of sense because a retailer has to spend time, you know, stocking shelves. They're renting a space. Usually, they've got to pay staff. All these things, right? And so the retailer, they're getting a $40 game for $20, but they've got a ton of expense that they've got to put in before that game. A lot of overhead before that game, goes out the front door. And so what Game Right did, I mean, and this is truly brilliant, is they put this system together called the Game Right Game Night. And what the Game Right Game Night is it's a program where a nonprofit can host a gaming event. And we'll talk about the structure of that gaming event in a minute. But basically, over the course of the night, you sell Game Right games at list price.
Yeah.
And just like a retailer, you basically pocket the profit for the nonprofit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you sell a $40 copy of Bucci, the PTO, in our case, would make $20.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at fundraisers, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this is not the, you know, sell you a $7 roll of wrapping paper and the school gets two.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's a great deal. And, you know, the only cost that you actually incur is they send you four boxes of games. Two of them are demo boxes and two of them are retail boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you ship them back, there's a good chance you probably are only shipping three boxes back.
Or maybe even two.
Or maybe if you sell really, really well. But I wouldn't want to mix any leftover retail in with the demo games anyway. But they send you a shipping label to ship the stuff back. But if you use that, like, you'll pay the cost of that shipping back, which might be 30, 40, 50 bucks or something like that, depending on where you are in the country. It really depends. We happen to be about 30 miles from Game Right headquarters, so I'm just going to drive those games in. It's cheaper. I get to see some friends, you know.
Yeah.
So they ship four boxes to you, two boxes of demo games, two boxes of retail games. They give you some stock that you can sell that night, and you can take orders.
Mm-hmm.
For future sales. And then you set up, I mean, obviously you do advertising and all these other things, and you set up for the game night. We did ours for about 2 hours.
Yep.
And what you do is we had a table for the demo games. It was a pretty big table, and we took all the demo games out of both boxes and kind of lined them up on the table, generally by youngest age range to oldest age range, right?
So more or less, yeah.
There's some overlap between them, but one of the sales sheets that they have, like the little standee thing that they provide to you, breaks them up by age. So it's pretty easy to find those categories and then put those all out on the demo table.
That's one of the things that I love about Game Right, just as a publisher in general, is that they're one of the few publishers out there that makes games appropriate all the way down to like 3 years old.
Like Go Away Monster.
And all the way up to adults-only party games.
Right. Not like inappropriate.
Not inappropriate.
Like complex enough.
Yeah, like
that
kids aren't going to have the domain knowledge they need.
Right.
So like 12-plus party games. And everything in between. I mean, we're talking Game Right does Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert.
Mm-hmm.
They're also really well known for Rat-a-Tat-Cat,
mm-hmm.
Which is on the younger end of things.
Yep. Sleeping Queens is a very popular one.
Mm-hmm.
The Rory Story Cubes, which kind of transcend any age, right? Dragonwood is a
Dragonwood
really
is a Game
popular,
Right game. Yep.
Published game from them. And so that is really how it works. And so when people walk in the door, what I try to do, because I was running the demo table, is I try to beckon them over to the demo table, and I would kind of give them the spiel. Here's the spiel.
So here's what you told people when they walked in the door.
Okay, here's how it works. So I have a table full of games. As you can see, most of the games are actually out being played, but I still have a couple of games left. So take a game and go and play it. And so what we did was you and I,
yeah,
we had a few Game Right games available, and so we gave tickets out. So anybody who brought a game back after playing it, we would give them a ticket. And then at the end of the night, we drew some tickets for winners, and they won a couple of games.
We had a little raffle.
We had a little raffle. Just to, you know, the whole point was play more games, right?
Yeah, play games, have fun, and then, you know, if you like what you see, buy some. But you know what? If you just want to come and play games and have fun, that's fine.
Yep, exactly. And so really that was, and the cool thing, so we had this in the middle school cafeteria. And I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say every single table had people playing games.
Yeah, there was a good half hour, 45 minute chunk in the middle when almost all the games were off the demo table.
Yeah, I had like three or four games left on the table. I was running, you know, people were, you know how like during Christmas season, people kind of vulture parking spots?
Yeah.
That's how it was with games, which was,
they were vulturing the games.
It was tough in one way because obviously you want to have enough variety for people to just go and grab something. Yeah. But at the same time, it was awesome that there were so many people there that were playing a lot of games. And one thing that happened to be really cool for our game night is that in this cafeteria, there's a series of cubbies along one wall where, like, if you come in, you could just shove your coat in a cubby. And cool. So we set a table up in front of that, and we used those cubbies to display all the for sale games.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, which was just great. So that's pretty much it. So we as people came in the door, that's really where we wanted the demo table to be. So people would come in the door. The demo table was right there. They'd come up. I'd give them the spiel. All we want you to do is play games. Have a good time. If you find something and you decide that you want it, go over to that sale table over there. And we got a couple. We had like PayPal readers so people could pay with credit cards or checks or cash or whatever and buy games. And that was it.
Yeah.
I mean, the event practically runs itself. It's really nice.
You need a fair number of people, but it's not one where you're – you know, begging people to spend money, you know, the spending money part is the games sell themselves.
They do. And I've said this before about Game Right. I mean, they do an unbelievable job keeping their games at reasonable prices.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how they do it sometimes. I mean, I guess maybe they're printing by like at volume or something and that allows them to,
I think it's also a component quality thing. Like not that their components are bad quality, but they tend to keep them cheap, which I'm okay with if it means the games are more affordable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert have a couple of like plastic cast pieces in them, but for the most part, it's just cardboard and cards.
Yeah, I mean, even some of the preschooler type games like Feed the Kitty, you have these little mice meeples and a bowl. Well, the mice meeples are wood, but the bowl is super cheap plastic. Like, really
yeah, and I guess what is it? What's the cupcake one?
Take the Cake.
Take the Cake. That's got some plastic pieces and wood pieces too.
It has one plastic piece, the cupcake shaker, and then the rest are these little wood sprinkle pieces, which cannot be all that difficult to make.
Right.
So some people may be listening to this and saying, huh, that sounds great. And you said it basically sells itself, but inviting people to come in and play a bunch of games seems a little risky. What if I'm sitting at the demo table and everybody's trying to ask me questions about how to play the games?
So that's an interesting question. So what Game Right does is they send you like a small stack of little stickers that say Game Guru. They're green stickers with the Game Right jester hat, and they say Game Guru. And the idea is they ship you all the games a week and a half or so ahead of time. And the idea / premise is that you have a couple people who sort of learn how to play some subset of the games.
Yeah.
But more important than actually just knowing how to play the games is knowing how to read a rule book.
Yes.
Because if you're just like, okay, well, let's take a look at the rule book together. And just read through and say, did you do this? Yes, no. Did you do this? Yes, no. Okay, well, this is what you do. This is what you do. And the reason why that's important is because if you know how to play a game, I don't know, Flashlights and Fireflies. You know how to play Flashlights and Fireflies. You go to a table and you kind of pick up where they left off and you start telling them what they need to do. But they had forgotten some step earlier and you didn't realize. And you didn't ask, did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? They're going to not have context that you assume that they have because of where they are in the game.
Sure.
So it actually makes a ton of sense to walk through the rule book, even if you totally know how to play the game.
Yep.
Because it makes sure that the people that are playing understand.
Yeah. And I mean, not everybody is going to feel comfortable reading a rule book and really digesting a rule book, especially in a noisy, chaotic environment like this.
Right.
It's part of the reason why rules videos and playthrough videos are so popular now for a lot of games.
Watch it played kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I was one of the people who fulfilled that role.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't because you were at the game table.
Sure.
But it's also why I only played two very short games. Most of the time I was walking around, people were like, you know, hey, can you explain this rule to me? Or, you know, I don't really understand how we're supposed to do the setup for this game,
right.
You know, or things like that. As well as a little bit of, hey, I heard that there's a copy of so-and-so. Can you help me find it?
Right, right. And one thing I will say, you know, we did this as a, you know, public school PTO fundraiser.
Yeah.
And most districts, at least around here, most districts that I have ever been affiliated with in any way, shape, or form, have National Honor Societies or National Junior Honor Societies in them. And you know what those people need to do?
I think they have to do service hours.
They do have to do service hours. Look, if you're in junior high, I mean, what better community service can you do than helping people learn how to play board games? Like, honestly, right?
Yeah.
So this, I mean, it's a great opportunity for service, even for the kids too. Like, you don't have to be an adult to know how to teach somebody how to play a game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, how I ran the demo table. You don't even have to know all the games to know what games to recommend to people because it's already broken out by age. It's such an easy, you know, it's such an easy cop out when a parent comes to you and says, "All right, what's good?"
Like,
all you have to do is say, "How old are your kids?" These are the games the Game Right has for that age range. It's easy. Like, it really does an incredible job of basically doing all the hard work for you. And you know, we've known Nora at Game Right for years. She's the one I think who does the vast majority of the game night stuff. She's just an amazing help. She gets everything. She's super responsive. Gets all the there
she's
is a contract
so
you have to sign and all that stuff. So she's just great, just wonderful, and they're really, really a neat company to do business with. I mean, they couldn't make it easier. They just couldn't.
Yeah.
So.
So I am looking at the official Game Right Game Night page, which we will link in the show notes, but it's quite simple. It is gameright.com/game night.
What?
I know, crazy. But they tell you right on here, they give you some suggestions on how to set up, where to set up, how many volunteers you're going to want. But they also will specifically point out in the guidelines here, once you have your date confirmed with Game Right, they will send you promotional posters and flyers for you to get the word out. You just fill in the information and...
Yeah, I mean, it's basically... I mean, it's a full-color thing which has the Game Right logo and graphic at the top. And it says, you know, what Game Night. And then it says, like, when. And you would write that part out. And then, like, where. And you would, like, write that part out. Yeah, so they do give you a little... Yeah. We didn't end up using a lot of stuff. By the time we got the games, what our school system did... Our schools are awesome.
So
they
so
sent flyers
PTO,
home with every single child.
Every kid in elementary school.
Yeah.
It was kind of awesome.
it was funny when our kids came home from school and they're like, "Hey, Dad, look what I got." And I was like, "Oh, that's awesome. I know who's doing that."
Yeah. Let me digress quickly here. So Asher, our first grader, was like... a day or two before the event, it was like, "I want to make little postcards to send home with all my friends so that they can make sure that they can come to the game night." And I was like, honey, they already sent flyers home. Like, the parents know. Trust me, the parents know. But he also stepped up, grabbed a Game Guru sticker, and grabbed a couple of other kids around his age and spent the entire 2 hours showing them the games that he knew.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, kudos to him.
Kids board game prodigy. I love that kid.
So, yeah, Game Right will send you flyers. They send you the boxes full of games along with the complete price list. Most of their games are under $15 retail, which is pretty awesome. They recommend a minimum of 5 volunteers. One for the demo table, one for the sales table, and at least 3 game brewers. I'd say that's about right, even if you're doing a smaller stripped down event like we used to do for the small private school.
Right. Well, for the small private, we probably only had 1 or 2 game
brewers. I think we had 2 game brewers, but even so, with the larger the event you're trying to run, the more game brewers you want, and the more game brewers you have, the less broad their knowledge has to be. Like, you can end up with people who really only know 2 or 3 games well. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
That's about it. Honestly, I think this is one of the best fundraisers I've ever been involved with.
And we've done it 3 times.
Yeah, we've done it 3 times because we enjoy it so much and it works so well. Anytime that you can spin a fundraiser as, hey, come and have fun, and if you want to spend money, great.
Right.
That does volumes for goodwill.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, obviously we're speaking really well of this because we ran it. but, you know, I talked to the president of the PTO and she was really happy. You know, for us, yeah, we're coming into the whole public school thing kind of fresh as parents anyway.
Yeah.
This year. And so a lot of the context we don't really have. And so if I say, hey, we made $200 in a night when we did this as a private school, I don't have any clue how that relates to what they would expect the level of effort to be on the income from, from a public school PTO event, because obviously it's going to be a lot larger. So the thing that I can say about this is, you know, it was the middle of March.
Yep.
We had a nor'easter 3 days earlier that dropped 2 feet of snow on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we still packed the place out.
Yeah, I was really surprised. The first half hour or so, I was like, oh, there's not a ton of people, but, you know, there's enough showing up. So right. I think we'll do okay. And then people just kept coming and they stayed. And they stayed until the end. And so by the end of the night, we were packed.
We were really, really busy. I almost think we should probably switch it to 6 to 8 next year if we can.
But yeah, I think that was part of our
problem. I mean, people get home from work at 5 o'clock. They're not going to, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be able to be there. But so we are going to do it again because we had such a great experience with this. We're probably going to do it in November.
Yeah, I highly recommend for anybody considering this, see if you can get it in early enough to be before at the beginning of the Christmas shopping season.
Yeah, before Black Friday. I mean, because, you know, when the first one of these we ever did, we sold so much as Christmas gifts that these were giving to their friends and family.
Tons.
That is the mint time to do it. And I would say, you know, if you can, if this is something that is interesting to you, if you can know by July, that's good, because that'll give you enough time to get your game night on the books, because, you know, even Game Night has capacity. So.
Yeah,
it was wonderful for us. I don't even know what the numbers really ended up being.
I know they were better than at the private school.
Well, okay,
but that's also
six times the people.
I think it was good, and if we can do it in the Christmas season, it'll be 3 or 4 times as good.
So I'm gonna say 2 things here. Number one, I know that we have publishers who listen to our show. This is an amazing event, and if you have a game catalog that could support this, think about doing something like it, because it's great goodwill for Game Right. They're selling their games as if they're selling them to a retailer anyway, and it's phenomenal for nonprofits.
Yes.
It is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for, you know, really, it's a win-win. Not to use buzzwords, but it's totally a win-win for everyone.
No, everybody wins, and to extend it, it's not even just Game Right and the PTO who win, it's also the parents who win in this situation. They come in, it's a curated event, they're not feeling pressured to spend money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see a kid come towards me with a catalog, and I'm like, okay, so this is the social contract. I buy something from you, and then your mom buys something from my kid. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And just not having that is just tremendous.
Oh, like, I was so strong on the Girl Scout cookies until we had a neighbor who was in Girl Scouts, and I'm like, I can't say no to you. I can say no to the anonymous kids at the grocery store, sitting outside the grocery store, but I can't say no to you.
So, you know, like I would say, number one, if you're a publisher, go do this. Number two, we have now done this 3 times.
Yeah.
If you have any questions, we are more than happy to answer them. I mean, there are some people who had previously emailed us questions, because we have, I think it was episode 44 vaguely mentioned.
We did mention
the game night.
We did mention the Game Right Game Night back in episode 44. Which,
that's weird. 44 and 88, huh?
And it is called Hosting a Game Night.
Oh, well, there you go.
but we only talked about it for like 3 or 4 minutes on that show. And we talked about mostly the logistics of getting people in the room and teaching them the games, and not so much the rest of it, getting the games and selling the games and packing them back up again and all of that.
So if you have any questions about the Game Right Game Night, or if you've done it or gone to one and you would like to share your experiences, there's lots of ways you can do that.
There are. You could leave a comment on the show notes at thefamilygamers.com.
Mm-hmm. You go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/familygamersAA, or you could go to our Facebook community and you could post on there. That's just go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right to the Facebook community.
Yep. You could tweet at us at familygamersAA.
Mm-hmm. We're also on Instagram at familygamersAA. I am going to try to get permission to put at least one picture from the game night on our Instagram feed.
Yeah.
But, you know, kids in the picture, got to get permission, all that stuff. So keep an eye on at FamilyGamersAA on Instagram, and hopefully you'll be able to see what a little bit of what it looks like. It looks like a high school cafeteria or middle school cafeteria, yeah. But there's
full
lots of games
people
being
playing games,
which is awesome. if you do want to ask us, like, questions and you don't want them to be public or whatever, you can just send us an email.
Yep. Anitra, A-N-I-T-R-A, at thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W, at thefamilygamers.com.
You make me feel weird when you spell your name. I spell my name because people can't figure it out.
Well, I mean, I'm not Andrew Jones, the former Atlanta Braves outfielder. He spells it differently.
Well, good for him.
At least I had a comeback.
Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. Tell your friends about the show. And if you would be so kind, leave us a review, either at Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe.
And by the way, you got to check out that video of us playing Pokemon.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's such a good time.
It's so
silly.
It's so wonderful.
Lastly, we want to give a shout out to the Dice Tower Network. We are proud members of the Dice Tower Network.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We have a lot of fun supporting those guys, and they support us. And it's a wonderful relationship that we have. And we also want to thank our sponsor for this episode, Wild East Games. You can check out all the games that they make at wildeastgames.com. And by the way, their release party for the expansion to Pirates of the Caribbean Farm is next Sunday.
Oh, fun.
So that game will be out, and it will be available. Well, that expansion will be out.
Yeah.
And you could have ratatized copies of Andrew and Anitra.
You could.
So
see if you can find us in the game.
In all seriousness, thank you very much to Wild East Games. They're a wonderful husband and wife couple. We've had them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very proud to be working with them.
I think that's it for the show.
All right. Until next week.
Play games with your kids.